Transition number 21552, Reel 9.
Remember Venables, Reel 9. So you were operating in the work up to Operation Husky, which was the invasion of Sicily, 43. Mm-hmm. Were you doing a number of jobs for that period?
Yes, we worked up from Gib, we worked up the aircraft carriers who covered those landings. Then, as far as I remember, we mostly came back, and we were based in... For a time, we were based in Portsmouth. When the U-boats were taken out of the Atlantic by Dönitz, they concentrated more around our coasts. So we were doing more close-in work for a time in the Bay of Biscay again and in the North Atlantic, but closer to England.
Were you aware at that time of the impact that all the various methods had on the U-boats?
Not really. I read about it afterwards. I mean, I was interested because various times, you know, once somebody got in touch, my old captain got in touch and asked me, did I remember so-and-so? At various times, there's a very good book called Convoy, was the last one I read. Read about it and discovered these things. I didn't know at the time round about, just after we were married, there had nothing to do with the fact that we were married, Dönitz actually withdrew his U-boats from the North Atlantic for the most part. We still escorted them, but we didn't have much trouble with U-boats.
But you were aware of a number of the new techniques that have become...
Yes, the snorkel. And I think it's perhaps because of the snorkel, partly, that they... operated near our coast. I don't really know, but we were aware of what a very dangerous development that was.
So how did you spend the rest of 43 then, after the work up in London?
As far as I remember, after working up, I think we may have done some more Atlantic convoys, but we also did more of this work in the Channel and round the Channel and in the immediate Western approaches.
Did you get many contacts, U-boat contacts, in that area?
I don't think we did very many. I can't remember that we did. Some people did. Sometimes you've got peculiar contacts because you've got a wreck. Of course, in those shallower waters, you get a wreck. There was one ship that heard some engine noises and released all their bombs, but they found it was a tide rip, you know, off Cherbourg somewhere. Cherbourg and Portland Bill, they stick out like this, and you get extraordinary tides past them, and that threw some of our colleagues. And then we were quite a long time in fairly home waters before the D-Day landings. By that time, we were in Falmouth.
What was it like to be operating in UK home waters after such a long time based away, really?
It didn't seem quite right. We were so used to taking off and off you went, and day in and day out, quick time over there and then back again. But on the other hand, there was something to be said for it.
What length? Would you do a patrol then from a UK base?
Yes.
How long would they last?
Well, they were all sorts of different things. Shortish trips. Comparatively, we were in Portsmouth for quite a long time.
What was Portsmouth like by 1943?
Oh, well, that was fine. We just made one. Our captain used to, as you worked up for the invasion, which was what, in June 44, earlier on, there were, of course, it started a long way before that, and there were a huge amount of ships in Portsmouth. And they couldn't put them all, usually in Portsmouth, you went alongside and walked ashore. But they anchored you in the Solent like this, and then they said, go to such and such a buoy, and they sent round a great old slow vessel which picked you up and took you ashore. Could take you 3 hours to get ashore. So our captain disapproved of that. He said, I think we'll go and anchor there. And we used to go and anchor off a point called Gilkicker Point, I remember, where the Marines... had some invasion barges, and we struck a deal with the Marines that they would come and fetch us, take us ashore in 10 minutes in their invasion barges, and we supplied them some rather illegal gin from our store.
It sounds like the captain had the best wishes of his men at heart.
Yes. Yes, he was a lovely chap.
Was that one of the things, you say he was a lovely chap, but was that one of the things that you found an excellent quality in a commanding officer?
Oh, total, yes. I mean, it's the first thing a commanding officer ought to do is to mind about his men, because without them, he's sunk. And in the last resort, he'll disappear over the side one night. You do depend on the men. I mean, it's dark. We didn't dress in uniform on board. You were all in oilskins, and sometimes you wore a cap just for the sake of it, but if the weather was filthy, and sometimes you were going along with the ship, and some sailor would say, "Oh, sorry, sir, I didn't recognise you." I mean, you weren't, distinguished in any way. In this way, you're all in the same boat, I say.
Because there seems quite a contrast between some of the captains that you've mentioned.
Yes, they were different, yes. Stannard was RNR, the ex-merchant service, and he went on to be a commander in the Orient Line, because my brother was in Australia and knew about him in the Orient Line. And he was just a sort of harsh commander. He was not loved by the men.
What about Knight?
Knight was loved by everybody. He was a gentle person and a good man.
So you were working up around the south coast.
Mm-hmm.
Was it obvious to you, obviously, with the number of landing barges that were there, that the invasion was building?
Yeah.
What would you have had a projected role in the invasion at that point? Would you have known about?
No, we didn't know, except that what we did was escorted. So we presumed that it was a pretty good guess we were going to be escorting something over to the beaches. And again, we didn't know. In fact, we didn't. I don't think in that operation we had much trouble with submarines, but obviously we didn't know that in advance. And we would be there, as always, for anti-submarine work.
So were you operating on the 6th of June?
We set off on the 6th of June from Milford Haven to the beach. So we arrived on the 7th. We arrived on D plus one. The day itself was extraordinary, because I'm sure you know that the invasion was almost started, and then they got frightened of the weather, so they called it back. And the way this struck me was that as we sailed out of Milford Haven, there were a most extraordinary procession of ships going across in that direction. Huge American cruisers, ships we'd never seen. They spent all the time up in Scapa somewhere. And then we were, suddenly shore started winking at us, and suddenly these ships were all going back in the way they'd come. It was like a mirage. And that was the time when they called it off, just at the last moment, because of the weather. And we were told to go back and anchor, so we went back and anchored, and the whole thing happened again the next day.
And as you went to the Normandy coastline, where did you anchor?
We anchored off Omaha. It was the worst beach, in a way. We were the Americans. And by the time we got there, although it was the most horrible beach, we didn't go in very close, and it didn't occur. You got odd things being lobbed at you from somewhere, but it didn't seem anything like as horrible as it turned out to be afterwards.
Were you giving any fire to support to the American troops at all?
We weren't. Our ship, we did, yes. I remember actually, there wasn't support for the American troops. We went to see the Rodney was going down like this great old vessel, and it sort of turned right and said, "Where's the old Rodney going?" And after a bit we heard, and what they'd done is the Germans had very much fortified Sark, so it went to blow Sark to small bits, or their guns to small bits. and Rodney came back again. I remember seeing it was anchored off the beaches once, and it was sort of this 13 miles inland, I was told. I met one chap who was a major in the army and a spotter, and he was very impressed with naval gunnery. He was an artilleryman, but he thought it was pretty spot on. And I always remember sitting there and she was doing this, and I noticed, as it happened, a sailor walking along the deck with his washing and hanging it out on a line.
What, as the ship was firing?
As the ship was firing, yes. Extraordinary sight.
What about yourselves? What were you involved in?
We escorted a lot of, you know, invasion ships. But of course, they weren't the first brand, so there was no terrific problem then getting ashore, I think. There was one boatload of Canadians, and their height of eye was below ours, so they couldn't see where they were. We were higher, and they actually flashed a signal to us, which way to the beach. And so I said to the signal, "Make back, follow me, have you got your bucket and spade?" It's a kind of humour, I'm afraid, which everyone had to put up with.
While you were escorting, was there any German air attacks at all that you?
We hardly saw. We saw odd things, but I remember when we went to the sort of talking about it beforehand, the chap came on and said, "Now we come to aircraft recognition. Don't worry, it'll be one of ours." More or less was. I mean, they pile every aircraft in the book on that operation.
So, how long were you operating off Normandy for, or between the UK and Normandy?
Well, we went there, and then we came back, and we did about three more trips to Normandy, where they still had to be escorted. And then at the end of that time, the engineer officer had been having trouble with a place where the propeller goes through the hull, you know, there's a bit of a leak. And he said, "Well, we've seen what there's to be seen of that invasion, we'd better get this fixed." Well, you couldn't get it fixed in Portsmouth, because every dock in Portsmouth was fixed. So we went guess where, Dingle Dock in Liverpool, and who should be there but Madame. And that was a great thing. We went off up to Liverpool for a fairly long time in there.
How long would you say, roughly?
I can't remember. Can you remember how long I was? I can't remember.
What would happen when the ship was having a refit like that with the crew? What would
half go on leave usually, and half stay put?
Would there be a cut off point? Say repairs took longer than were imagined. Would you then be transferred to another ship? I mean, or would generally ship's crew
one
stay
heard
with?
Of one heard of cases. I was half hoped it would happen to me, but I'm sure I would have hated if it had, that the people would get sent off on leave and nothing happens for months. But it never happened to me. What happened was that they sent, usually half went on leave and half stayed behind.
Would that rotate then?
And that rotates, yes. Most of the time there I was there, and because Doris was there, and we had some lovely friends there, so we didn't even have to stay in a hotel. We stayed with some friends, and I remember those times in Liverpool with great pleasure.
What did you do for entertainment in Liverpool?
One of the things we found with dear Liverpool is we, obviously, when you've been at sea all the time, you long to go for a walk in the country. But you try that from Liverpool, you have to go to North Wales. So that's what we did sometimes. So we went to Chester for the day once, didn't we? Walked round in Chester.
Southport.
And we went terrible trip once to Southport, when each thought that the other wanted to go to Southport. And we sat on the beach and roared with laughter because we found that we were both wrong and none of us wanted to go to Southport.
Could you see the sea at Southport?
We just saw the sea yet again at Southport, yes.
So you had this period in Liverpool. What was the state of Liverpool at that time?
Was the bombing ending by then?
No. No bombing.
No, the bombing was over. The bombing period seems to me was over by then. And we either stayed with a cousin of my wife's who had one child and couldn't go out to work. She said she was my husband was a major. She said, if only I'd had to go out to work, I would have done. But it was very boring. So she loved seeing us. She loved having us. She was very nice. We stayed there. We stayed with another chap he just happened to have one of the best libraries I've ever seen. And there was no time to read his books, but somehow, after the North Atlantic, a room lined with books was exactly what the doctor ordered. Lovely chap.
So what happened when the ship was repaired then? What happened then?
Then we went off, and by then we're thinking about...
Would this be late 44?
Late 44.
Landings would have been in June. So.
Yes, in June. As far as I can remember, we were in home waters for a good deal of that part of the time. We came around the east coast and were based roughly in Harwich or somewhere like that.
And in Chatham.
Yes, I remember we went to Sheerness as well. And by that time, we were doing anti-e-boat patrols up the east coast with a curious system. I don't know if it was widespread or how well it worked. You went with one e-boat, with one MTB. It was against the e-boats. And they hadn't got very good radar. So the idea was you went and you had the radar and you vectored them on to the e-boats as they came in. I mean, you didn't vaguely say there's an e-boat bearing so-and-so. You would say, hey, steer 070, full speed, there's something out there. we did that for a time, up and down the east coast.
Was there a problem with e-boats at that time on that section,
yes,
of course?
Yes, there was.
Because it seems that seems to have been something that the Germans had introduced later in the war again.
Yes, I think it was, yes.
And the U-boat threat was again around British coastal waters.
Yes. And then we also, right at the end of my time in the ship, we were taking convoys over to the Scheldt. And the drill then was you went to Southend, an extraordinary place. I used to go with the captain, being his navigator, to a convoy conference with a load of real hard-bitten skippers of merchant ships. We then get in our merchant ships and ships and come round and anchor where else but in Deal. And I used to look at this little town through my binoculars, little thinking that I'd never live in it, thinking, what a nice little place that looks. And then you creep across slowly, because by this time they had auditive minds. They listened to your propellers and blew you up if they were going fast enough. But if you went at 5 knots, it didn't work them. So you went off quite close, and about the middle of the channel, you reduced to 5 knots, and you took these convoys up the Scheldt. First time we went up there, all the boys had been moved, and the Germans had just left, and the boys were all over the place, and we anchored, we'd better anchor here, and the doctor was fishing over the side in the evening, captain smoking a cigar on the quarter deck. He said, sir, there is much water here, I got my weight on the bottom. He said, ring on main engines, and we slipped off a sandbank just about in time, otherwise we might have been stranded there.
Did you have a problem navigating into the Scheldt?
Well, we had an extreme problem if the boys weren't there, which had been deliberately mucked about with by the Germans. So what we did after we got a Belgian pilot on board who came on board. He was very funny because he said, the last ship I brought in here was German and it was so different. I said, what's the difference? He said, well, the German captain always stands up there and shouts at the top of his voice. And you know, it's almost affectation in the Navy. You just mutter into voice pipes, you know. Trigger one, ring up aft, and let go aft, hold on to the spring, and so on. And the difference, he said, he apologised for taking German ships in, because he said, they would have shot my family if I hadn't. And we said, we quite understand. As long as you take us in, we don't mind at all. It was very odd.
Did you anchor at... would you go as far as Antwerp?
Yes, we did. We went alongside in Antwerp. Almost felt like going alongside the main street. And what's more, it was fairly horrifying because the Germans had only just gone and the place was... they weren't particularly keen to see us, I got the feeling. And the V1s were going off quite close and it was ugly, very horrible.
Was there any reason for that, would you say?
Well, they'd suffered a lot. I remember objecting to the price of things. I mean, you know, the ones we saw didn't treat us anything like when we when they were celebrating D-Day. We went, you know, years afterwards, we went to France. It struck us. The French said, "Oh gosh, we were very glad to see you lot. They were extraordinary." And the great banners, "Welcome to our liberators." But just at first, in Antwerp, it was only just after the Germans had left, they were probably a bit traumatised, they weren't very welcoming.
And what type of Navy vessels were in Antwerp at the time, apart from yourself, like destroyers, was the...
I can't really remember, just one or two small vessels, nothing very big, a few corvettes maybe.
So how many of those type of runs did you do up the Scheldt?
I think we might have done two, but no more.
Because I take it that would have been, as I say, late 1944, probably, wouldn't
yes.
it, after the liberation?
Yeah.
What happened next after you'd done those?
Well, soon, I forget exactly when. When did I leave the ship? Because I went off to be... I went off... to be, I did a long navigation course. That was later. I went off minesweeping. No, that was after the navigation course. I can't really remember what happened just in the end of 1944.
But you left the ship at that time, did you?
I must have.
You were quite there.
Hmm? I left the Vimy after lots of odd jobs around the coast of England, up the east coast and across to the Scheldt. I left her in April 1945.
The war was coming to an end nearly at that time. Had you any anticipation that, although it was ending in Europe, that you might be sent to the Far East?
Yes, I did. Not any anticipation, but I was appointed to a job in the Far East, which was to navigate the fleet train in the Far East, which frightened me out of my wits. But they dropped that nasty bomb, and they changed the rules and said that married men shouldn't go out there.
What was the fleet train?
The fleet train was a number of oilers and supply ships escorted by battleships and cruisers and everything, which went around, you know, supplying the Far Eastern fleet, because they hadn't got bases with all this stuff there, necessarily.
And you went on a navigation course for that?
I went on the Long N Star course, as it was called. I went on a long navigation course.
Can you explain what that difference
well
that and another
that was a it was turned you into a proper I mean as I told you I mean I did the job but I did the job on the strength of 3 weeks course. This N Star course was a course to train proper Royal Naval navigating officers. They had in fact at that point, for reasons best known to themselves, made me a QO, which means a qualified officer, which meant that I ranked with the RN. I couldn't have cared less. But I think it would have helped if I'd wanted to stay on after the war, because I counted as a proper pucker RN officer with straight stripes. I didn't have straight stripes. And I dare say, had I wanted to stay on, I could have more easily, since I, with a navigation course. In fact, they did say that, you know, any navigators want to stay on, because navigation branch was growing, because it's doing all the sort of expertise with plots and all the rest of it. I mean, modern ship is fought from below decks, not on the bridge, but with a chap on a plot and all sorts of information coming, and the navigator is now more of a key figure than he was. It's not just a question of getting the ship from A to B.
Was there anything on this course that was new to you that you hadn't...
Oh, an awful lot. An awful lot of the time I found I should have been doing things which I hadn't been doing. I thought, oh, it was all right. But had I been had the ship run aground, they would have wanted to have seen all my star sights when I put them in the book. What I, in fact, did was worked them out on the signal pad and then chucked it over the side. I mean, after I'd used it and put it on the chart, I didn't keep all the evidence.
So in some way, was it formalising what you, some of the things that you knew already?
Yes, it was, nearly all. More to the point, and it was great fun. I did get my one half season of first-class rugby because the United Services Portsmouth was then a very good side, and they had a couple of internationals, and we played against Richmond and Blackheath were then together, and it was good, and I much enjoyed that because I'd been starved of it.
Were you doing that course? Was it a fairly long course, and were you doing it when the war ended?
Yes, yes.
Can I ask you what your reaction was, firstly, to VE Day?
It was strange. I was in Liverpool, and my wife had very splendidly begot herself with child, at least not herself, I was a bit of help, and she had left the Wrens, and so she was no longer in Liverpool, and she was replaced by a nice girl called Hutchinson, and I spent VE night escorting Hutchinson round Liverpool, looking at the VE Day celebrations.
What were they like in Liverpool?
Well, it was extraordinary, because the sailors and the soldiers and the airmen were absolute solid in the pubs, and they were not shouting or jubilant. They were just sort of rather quiet, struck me.
Would you think there would be a reason for that?
Well, I think it was to do with... the way it all started, not that this was a glorious episode in Britain's history. This was a frightful job that we couldn't see any other way of doing it, and now it was over, and thank God for that.
But could there have been anticipation that they would be posted to the Far East as well at that time?
I don't know. I might have done, but... I don't think, there weren't an awful lot of people went out there. I don't know if that was, if they felt strongly about that.
Similarly, do you have any memories of VJ Day?
By then, none at all, no. Once it was decided I wasn't going to go out there, and instead I went and did a brief period in minesweeping, no. I don't think VJ Day meant much to me at all, because it didn't affect me. I was relieved.